please.
Sounds good. I'm glad to hear it. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve the Rapp County check sheet for October 8th, 2019. Accounts payable, cycle date October 7th through October 11th, in the amount of $738,850.50. Payroll checks in the amount of $4,320.33, and IRS and state income tax wires in the amount of $739.34, for total disbursements approved of $743,910.17.
Second. Any other discussion? Items of note?
Yes, Commissioners, I have quite a few items to bring to your attention. We had a payment to the Board of Land Commissioners. This is from the Road and Bridge budget, and this is the royalty payment for the gravel we mine out of the Funk Pit. And this is for September 2019, $1,022.72. And right under that, we have payment to CWH Properties, also from the Road and Bridge budget and from the Funk Pit, and the royalty payment to CWH for September 2019, so payment of $1,687, so $2,690 for both of those royalty payments. We have a payment to Tyler Technologies. This is from our IT budget, and this is for the assessor and treasurer Tyler Systems support, November 1, 2019 through October 30, 2020. Payment of $11,522.70. Payment to LaWand Associates. This is from the IT budget, and this is the annual Cisco Smart Net maintenance contract, $12,266.02. We also have a payment to Mimecast North America, also from the IT budget, and this is for our contract for email archiving, $12,975. We have a payment to NWCC Inc. This is from the Road and Bridge Capital Pool, and this is for material testing on the County Road 14 and the County Road 1662 asphalt overlays that we had this year, payment of $7,172.70. We had a payment to the Oak Creek Fire Protection District. This is from the wildfire budget, and this is for Thor Mountain Fire from September 8th. These are personnel costs, and there were no equipment charges. A payment of $1,033.53. Payment to Pawnee Butte Seed Inc. This is from the Road and Bridge budget, but this was for erosion control seeds. We had to make sure you didn't think it was from our noxious weed department. $5,142.80. We have a payment to the City of Steamboat Springs. This is the Building Department distribution of permit and taxes collected from the Building Department for September 2019, a distribution to the City of $22,292. Then we have another distribution to the City of Steamboat Springs from the County Clerk's Motor Vehicle Office, a distribution of specific ownership tax for September 29th, a payment of $104,490.44. Then we had our paint striping bill that we for payment marking to Straight Stripe Painting Inc. This payment was $28,965, and this is for the paint striping that's done after we do our chips and seals and our asphalt overlays. They are here twice every year because of those intersecting projects. Payment to Transwest Trucks. This is from the Road and Bridge Heavy Equipment budget. And then the purchase of a bottom dump trailer purchase, $35,165. Then payment to GEO Stabilization International, and this is for rockfall mitigation on County Road 129 from the Road and Bridge budget. That payment, $112,072. Then payment to Calcon Constructors, and this is from our building and plant pool, and this is for the extra hardscape efforts that we had at the Sheriff's Office for concrete work and setting light poles and fencing, replacing old stuff we had in front of the Sheriff's Office. and as related to the CLEP project, this payment $57,643. And finally, we had a payment to Storm Wild LLC. This is from the IT department budget, and this is online training for 5 employees. So it was online training that employees took in order to maintain their credentials. $7,500 for those that training.
Is that it?
That's it. One more.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair, on our consent agenda item, I'd like to
I think I need to talk about yesterday's work session first. It's okay. It'll be brief.
Okay.
So yesterday in our work session, we received updates from the county manager and legal, as well as a budget work session. Now it's your turn.
Madam Chair, I'd like to pull consent agenda item B for discussion. Would you like me to make a motion to approve the other one first?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move to approve consent agenda items A, C, and D.
Eric, you're not here to talk about any of those, are you?
D.
Do we need to have some discussion?
I don't think so.
Okay. Just if we have questions. Okay, sounds good. Second, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So in the matter of consent agenda item B, I would move that we approve resolution number 2019-057, a resolution proclaiming October 15th, 2019 as American Legion Centennial Day. And I think in this particular case, I think I'm going to go ahead and read the entire resolution.
Sounds great. Please do.
Mind. Whereas the American Legion has been a staunch advocate for veterans and their families since 1919. Whereas the American Legion was founded on the 4 pillars of care for veterans, a strong national defense, Americanism, and children and youth. And whereas the American Legion has played a leading role in initiatives and breakthroughs that have affected the lives of Americans in every community, from the U.S. Flag Code to the GI Bill. And whereas the American Legion is celebrating its centennial in 2018-2019. And whereas American Legion Post 44 has fulfilled the Legion's mission since October 15th of 1919 through programs such as the building of the racetrack and rodeo grounds, purchase of several community centers, fireworks displays since 1935, Memorial Day services at the Steamboat Springs Cemetery since 1921, and sponsorship of youth and veteran programs. Now, therefore, the Rock County Board of County Commissioners, Colorado, hereby proclaim October 15th, 2019 as American Legion Centennial Day, and urge all citizens of Rock County, Colorado, to observe American Legion Centennial Day and recognize the important role that the American Legion Leo Hill Post Number 44 has played in the development of the county during the last 100 years.
Second.
Would we like to invite someone from the American Legion to?
Yes, absolutely. Is there anyone who would like to make a comment? All right, please come on up. You're welcome to take a seat.
To do what? How math is?
Tim Corrigan.
Hi, Tim. Good to meet you.
We'd love to just hear from you a little bit about the American Legion.
Well, Jim Stankel put together a big two or three page article going back, digging through all the history of the American Legion, and it's really quite fascinating what all they've done over the years and what an active organization it's been in the community. And serving both veterans, youth, and as well as the interests of the community in making Steamboat Springs a better place to live.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you for your service. Thank all of you for your service. I know my father was a veteran of World War II. I was in the 1st Marine Division, landed on Guadalcanal in Okinawa and was wounded on Okinawa. And so I personally have a great appreciation for what veterans have done for this country to protect our freedom. Thank you very much.
Okay. We'd like to thank the county commissioners and all the government bodies. Later on this afternoon, we're going to meet with the city council for their support in the American Legion and recognizing us and helping us with facilities as well as services such as transit and just the, basically the support that makes our lives a lot easier too. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Did I take that yet? I didn't.
No, it's probably not, right. Probably not in doubt, but you probably
not
should,
controversial.
Go, probably should go through the motions.
All right. All in favor of adoption of the resolution?
Aye.
Thank you all very much. Thank you
may
for
coming.
You may. Come on up. It's public comment time, so come on
sure,
up.
Sure, come on up. Absolutely, Dan, but we want you on the
on the record. Okay.
My name is Dennis Fisher. And I'm
get to the microphone.
There. And no. I want to acknowledge what Jim Stanko has done over the years. I mean, he has kept this thing going together. His involvement is astounding. He's on national committees. He's on the national committee to review the VA hospital fiasco. And we are so fortunate to have Jim Stanko as our in conjunction, you know, with other commanders and stuff. But with his experience and stuff, he's done a fantastic job for the post and continues to do so. And the last thing I want to say is the Twin Towers are no longer there. They're gone. There used to be these wonderful, huge, beautiful Twin Towers, and now they're gone. So the enemy is at the gate, and we have to be eternally vigilant. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Jim. Any other comments?
We have time.
We have lots of time.
If anybody else would like to say anything.
Come on up, Jim.
Yes, Jim Stanko. And I just wanted to make comments since you said that your father was in World War II. Part of our work with the museum this year, last year, you know, we honored all the World War I veterans. This year we will be doing a display on World War II and Ralph County's involvement in World War II, and we will dedicate that exhibit on Veterans Day, and so I'd like to personally invite you to come because we would like to have, since your father, because we are honoring the veterans of World War II on Veterans Day.
Thank you very much.
My grandfather was in World War II.
Really?
Yes. My other grandfather was in the Korean War.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely. Anyone else like to speak? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for your time and for your service.
Do we want to give these folks a copy of it, maybe on some nicer paper?
Yeah. I think Deanna's on that, right? Do we know who to give it to? Yes,
okay.
That would be great. Thank you.
And then
you.
We have one really quick item, and I assume that you're here for dogs.
Dogs on patio.
Gotcha. Okay.
Dog day.
Yeah, the Board of Health will convene at 11.
Right.
Perfect.
Okay, so we are here for consideration of the Route County Board of County Commissioners to waive the formal purchasing process and approve the independent contractor agreement to Scott C. Smith for 3 Route County water and wastewater treatment facility services to include Phippsburg Water, Phippsburg Wastewater, and Milner Wastewater for an annual amount not to exceed $36,000. Scott Smith has been doing this as a Route County employee, and he's moving on to take on other projects as well as ours. So we are going into this contract so that he can continue to maintain on a part-time basis, those three facilities. And then we've also written into the contract that should there be additional projects, that we will pay him for that time separately. But the annual contract will be this $36,000. That's why we're asking for the sole source, due to the fact that he understands the facilities and the equipment, and he has the whole history. So it's definitely in the county's best interest to continue this relationship.
And just to add to that, he's been managing the facilities as the operator for 25 years. And like Julie was saying, the $36,000 covers our regulatory responsibilities for the facilities.
And is that what we've been paying him previously as an employee?
Yeah, when we did the budget analysis, it's basically a wash. It's really close.
So in the past, he's actually turned in time cards showing the number of hours that he's worked, and we've paid?
That's correct.
Okay. And so there wasn't a set number of hours per week that he was working. He was providing the service on an as-needed basis.
No, there was a set amount of hours that he was charging per week.
And do we know if there's a change to how much this position will cost Route County as a result of making this?
I think we determined that there's actually a dollar savings.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Do we know?
By him providing these services on a subcontract basis.
It's,
rather than as an employee.
I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I just know that it was pretty negligible.
Okay.
As far as the difference.
So what,
I want to say that maybe it was a little more for one and a little less for the other.
But not much difference.
So what would you envision would be the kind of work that might crop up that would constitute the need for him to bill for additional work?
Yeah, a broken pipe, having to go out and shut off valves, maybe installing a pump, repairs to the water treatment building, some of that equipment.
So his work is limited to the maintenance and monitoring of that equipment and the adding of chemicals as needed and testing the water as it comes out and making sure that it's all adequate?
That's correct. And I think that it would take something out of the ordinary. I mean, there's maintenance responsibilities on some of the equipment that's included within this. It's more like a pipe break or unusual situation where he's having to be out there abnormal hours. And, you know, when we have had that happen in the past, I'm out there, he's out there, we're looking for valves, shutting things off, coordinating for a contractor to come in and do repairs and things like that.
And then within his contract, he has a responsibility to ensure that these services continue to be provided, even if he is personally not capable of doing that?
That's correct, and that's the other advantage, that it allows him to have somebody come in and back him up, and I can also back him up, but I don't always have time to do that.
Right.
And it's just so long as they have the correct certifications that he can have somebody come in, and that makes that a little less common.
And he has that capacity.
Yes.
Yes. And I know the answer to this, but I just want to confirm that legal has reviewed this and agrees that it's appropriate for him to not be considered an employee.
Yes, and actually that's why they recommended the independent contractor rather than professional services.
My guess is that this actually probably cleans up what his relationship has been with us in the past.
Yeah.
That is also correct.
Great. I don't have any other questions.
Great. Madam Chair, I would move the Board of County Commissioners waives the formal purchasing process and approve your signature on the independent contractor agreement to Scott C. Smith for an annual amount of $36,000 for services for the Route County Water and Wastewater Treatment Facilities, to include Phippsburg Water, Phippsburg Wastewater, and Milner Wastewater.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you. Is Carrie joining us?
Nope.
Carrie Ledro is not joining us?
Not for Dogs on Patios.
Later.
The Board of Health meeting is at 1.
So the discussion of Dogs on Patios is in our capacity as the county commissioners or Board of Health?
Board of Health.
So we need to convene as the Board of Health.
That's right.
Sound good? All right. So our first item for discussion is statewide variance RF 19-55, criteria to allow dogs that are not service dogs in an outdoor patio area. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. I'm Scott Kalman, Director of Environmental Health for Rock County. I have Rick Melzer with me, who is an environmental specialist in the Environmental Health Department. He has been sort of the primary contact for this effort. We are requesting consideration from the Rock County Board of Health for inclusion of Colorado retail food rules and regulations that establish criteria to allow dogs that are not service animals on outdoor patio areas. And then moving further to the background, allowing dogs on patios of retail food establishments, while currently against regulations, is, based on my personal observation and feedback from other people, pretty pervasive. The variance to the rules and regulations establish stipulations for owners who request permission for this activity. And then I refer to the attachment of that letter from the state dated June 11th, 2019. Acceptance of the variance would grant our department oversight authority under the recently established statewide variance following a formal request to our department from an establishment that wants to allow the activity. And so what we're asking from you is just acceptance for us to start considering those variance requests.
So we wouldn't be making a change right now. It would just be saying that we should be considering it. Because I imagine we'd need to write some kind of have a resolution or something of that type, wouldn't we?
I don't think so.
We wouldn't
no.
need to.
I think all that an establishment would need to do is request a variance from our department. We would evaluate it based on the state regulations.
But we don't need to have it in our regulations? That's not the way it works? Okay.
No. And so all we're seeking from you is, you know, we're letting you know that we'd like to begin accepting these variance requests just so long as the Board of Health agrees that that's the direction they want to go to allow this activity going forward. To me, in my opinion, since the activity is pretty pervasive already, really what this does, it gives us some guidelines to be able to enforce it. And it gives food establishments guidelines for if they want to allow that activity, they have to comply with the regulations per the variance.
The 1-8 criteria.
Right. And I'm sorry, Rick, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Currently we have one request for a variance. Prior to this statewide variance, there was always the opportunity for variance from any retail food regulation. And so before the June 11th date, I think there was roughly 20 or 30 establishments in the state of Colorado that had received variances, none in Round County. So there were establishments that had variances in different counties prior to this. This is an effort to provide a more uniform set of guidelines.
So we as the Board of Health always had the ability to allow this activity. The advantage is now there's actually a set of criteria that we can rely on.
Correct, a more defined set of criteria. And prior to this, we had not received any formal requests. I think something, it's case-by-case basis, and this is for outdoor patios, which could be the one challenge. Not a grass area, not, you know, stone area, like a smooth, durable, easily cleanable outdoor patio, separate entrances, defined. So
in your professional opinion, does compliance with these eight criteria constitute maintaining the safety of our dining public?
Yes, I think it basically boils down to the establishment having active managerial control, which is they need that for all these regulations. So they have to be able to manage it and prove they can manage it, or they don't get it.
So a violation of these requirements would cause the variance to be removed from
there.
Correct.
Yes, and then, you know, digging in a little deeper, it's basically, in a nutshell, three strikes, re-inspections, follow-up inspections, civil penalties. I think effective January 1st, It seems like the CDPHG is not going towards civil penalties. It's going to be three reinspections. You're closed for 3 days, up to 3 days, until compliance is achieved, or you can pull it. I mean, you can pull it after the first one. Hey, this isn't working.
But would that require an action by the Board of Health, or is that within your authority as the inspector to...
Correct. That's in the inspector's authority, the delegated authority from the state.
This question, go ahead.
Except that they don't delegate authority to you. We do.
We are in the Food Protection Act, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think the way it works is if we do get into this situation, there is a form that's called voluntary closure form.
Right.
And so in the past when we've had to close an establishment, the owner has agreed, you know, to sign the form and go through the process. And then I think that if they refuse, then we go into another process. But I'm not aware that the Board of Health would ever be involved.
Well, it just seems like if we're sitting here approving a variance, it kind of feels like you'd need to come back to us.
So we're not asking you to approve a variance. What we're asking you is to accept the fact that we're going to add this to our program.
Oh, okay. All right, I get it.
Yeah, because it doesn't supersede any local laws or ordinances.
And we're not approving a specific variance. We We're delegating authority to grant that variance.
So we also have the authority to...
This question may be somewhat tangential, but I know that, like, in the city of Steamboat Springs, there are a lot of food establishments that technically aren't supposed to have a patio, but they do. How is that considered in this type of a regulation? Are we just neutral to that fact, and that's just the city's code enforcement issue?
That could be a code enforcement. I mean, the definition of a retail food establishment, the premises, is where they're serving food. So where do those meet with the zoning regs? I mean, when we go do an inspection, we're inspecting their outside,
where they're serving food. It just seems like if they don't technically have a patio per their zoning rules, how could we allow a dog on their patio?
They would request a variance.
From us.
And then
I guess I just wonder if we would consider whether they have a legal patio or not.
That's what I was going to
say. That's kind of my question.
Yeah. And if they didn't have a legal patio, I don't see how we could grant that variance.
Yeah, I think that's something you guys can handle within your department. It sounds like a great idea to ask for to refer it to city planning.
Yeah.
And make sure that there's
that this variance is then requested. And then the last question I have is, I don't see anywhere in here where the state has provided for our health department to, environmental health department, to charge any additional fees for this additional work. I mean, this is going to be some additional work for us.
Yeah. I guess what we'll do is see how it goes this year if we move forward and decide to do the program. Mm-hmm. And then I'll make that assessment for the next budget year if it's, and we have a time tracker. That's why we keep track of our time. We can add that to the time tracker and see what the impact to the department is. I don't anticipate that it's going to be
that big of a deal.
But certainly if we, if it's taken up a bunch of time, then we would consider fee.
And we have the authority to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, we have the authority to raise our fees up to a maximum amount, correct?
Well, I guess in this case, it's local control. I don't think that there's a cap, but
you might be thinking of that.
You're thinking about on-site wastewater treatment systems where there is a cap, and that's not local control. And we'll talk about temp events next week, where that's another example of local control and where we've set the fees and things like that. But I think, like I said, we would take a look at see what the impact is and then come back and implement a fee if we needed to do that next year.
All right.
Do you have any other questions?
You ready?
I want to see if anyone who's here wants to make a public comment before we... Would you like to?
No.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. You can awkwardly join us here at the table. We just like to keep things really uncomfortable.
No, you're fine. I'm Corey Wagner. I'm one of the owners of Snowball. So one of the things that we had done was we had put a pretty sizable outdoor patio in, both hardscape concrete surface as well as a larger grass area. And as I'm sure you would expect with everybody having their dogs and their car with them when they go to the stores or on a hike or whatever it is, when we have many people stop in, that's one of the first questions they ask is, do you guys allow dogs? And unfortunately, it's been disappointing that we've always had to respond that, no, well, unfortunately, we can't allow dogs. So we think that this would be a big help for the business, big help for the community, is people love their dogs. That's pretty obvious. So if it was something, and it seems like the state has provided pretty good guidance of how to manage this and have it not become a health safety issue, and we would greatly appreciate if the county would be willing to adopt the variance guidance that's been provided by the state. So
thanks very much.
No problem. Thank
yeah.
you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would move to accept statewide variance RF-1955 that establishes criteria to allow dogs that are not service animals in outdoor patio areas.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the next item is to talk about on-site wastewater treatment system in consideration for an increase in fees. And I told Rick he could stick around. And
so, always.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
And what time was that item for? Do we have to wait? Or
no, we do not.
I don't think it has.
They're both scheduled for 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, shall I begin?
You may.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rock County Department of Environmental Health is requesting consideration from the Rock County Board of Health to increase permit application fees for on-site wastewater treatment systems from $300 for a new permit and $100 for a repair permit to $600 for a new permit and $200 for a repair permit. A fee of $600 would also be charged for a major repair requiring a design from Colorado Certified Professional Engineer. So I have provided a lot of background information, including a cost analysis. We had talked about a cost analysis that was done initially, and then I got together with Sean, our accountant, to look at that. I originally stated that our current cost recovery was about 35%. The new calculation for that is about 60%. So the reason that it changed is for 2020 is that I had a bunch of money leave my budget, all the public health dollars. And so when you calculate cost recovery, you're looking at your overall budget and the amount of time that people are putting into on-site wastewater. And so that's the reason that calculation changed, basically. So under 2020, moving forward, the current fees would, our cost recovery for current fees would be about 60%. And so by increasing our fees to $600 and $300, we move that cost recovery to 99% and 90%. 99% for repair permits, and 90% for new permits. And I also added in the assumption of adding a 0.25 FTE. And under the current fees, our cost recovery would drop to 95% and 86%.
Under the new fees, correct?
Under the new fees, okay. With that seasonal employees, that would be 0.25. I guess the other thing I had to add was that I gave you a table that tracked what the fees are for the rest of the state. And you'll notice that we are fifth lowest in the state for fees currently. So most of the counties charge quite a bit more. $600 would put us about in the middle. Some of those counties also have more programs and, you know, much larger populations. And some counties have a full staff of OWTS people. And then, you know, those counties are asking the state to lift that cap of $1,000. It's actually $1,023 because that $23 goes to the state.
Right.
Because they're not meeting their cost recovery. They're way below 100%. And so they're asking the state to lift that cap, either to remove it altogether or to increase it by some number. And so that's something that's going on at the state level right now. They also took a survey of all the counties in the state to see who was and wasn't over 100% cost recovery. And it's hard to calculate unless you're tracking your time. And so, you know, not everyone could respond, but we were able to do that and landed at 60% cost recovery currently. So one of the things you have to think about is what's appropriate. I think most counties are saying that we want 100% cost recovery for this program, but it's really up to the Board of Health to decide, you know, is this a public service that we're okay paying a little bit for, or should our goal be to be close to 100% recovery for that work and that service? And I think that's all I have. So if you have any questions about the calculations or anything else, we're happy to try to answer those.
The only question I had is looking at this chart, this one, mm-hmm. There's a lot of different types of fees that are charged by various entities. Yeah. Are those services we don't provide, or it doesn't make sense for us to charge fees for other types of services?
That's a great question. Everyone's program is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this table does is it includes all of the services that all of the counties provide. Mm-hmm. And so some charge an hourly rate. Some who have like programs for advanced treatment, you know, charge for a variance. Different counties classify minor repair versus major repair and have specific criteria. Some counties go out and do the soil inspections themselves. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we'd like to have seasonal employees to try to tighten that up, to try to go out with the engineers and look at the soils and make sure that we are evaluating the soils consistently. So that's it. Really represents all of the programs that the counties in Colorado offer, mm-hmm. all the services they offer under the OWTS program. So in our case, we're just looking at new permit, repair permit, and major repair, really, because we don't currently offer all of those services. Certainly, we could start charging for our time, and that would be another way to meet cost recovery objectives. There's a lot of things. We have a lot of flexibility under the program to change the way we run things.
The only one that I wasn't sure if it would make sense mm-hmm. for us is the annual renewal. Is that something you've considered, or it doesn't make a lot of sense?
I don't think it makes sense for our program. I think it makes sense, and maybe it's a requirement for advanced treatment. Because you have to have, for advanced treatment, you have to have a management plan, and there's reporting requirements, and then we have to, and then I think maybe that there's an annual renewal.
Mm-hmm.
The programs that we're thinking about for next year are installer certification, installer licensing.
And that would be this category that's here.
Yeah, and we could charge for that or not. You know, it's up to us.
Okay.
I think most counties charge for it. And then also, you know, title transfer. And so, for example, Summit County will have a use permit. That's really their title transfer program, is when somebody sells their property, they have to obtain a use permit. And we're not quite ready to go there yet.
Okay.
We don't approve any advanced treatment
systems. We do not.
Okay.
And the reason is that, one, we have the zoning regulations, that 5-acre rule. And then two, like I was saying, it requires a maintenance program that needs to be evaluated and reporting back to our department. So it would be a new level of oversight
right.
to manage that program. And we certainly could do that, but we would need probably additional staff and have to figure out how to provide that service.
So the five-acre rule, I mean, that's relevant because you wouldn't need an advanced treatment system on 5 acres?
That's correct.
Okay. You would really use it only on a smaller...
That's right.
Okay.
And what that does, that's exactly what it does. It allows you to have a treatment system in a smaller area.
Yeah.
This new fee structure envisions the use of the 0.25 seasonal FTE.
It does both.
It does both.
He listed both.
Okay.
So if you look at the bottom here, that's without, and then the bottom is with.
In terms of cost recovery percentage.
So it contemplates both scenarios.
Under either way, we still won't get to 100% of cost recovery. That's right.
And so in going through it, you kind of realize that it's an imperfect science, I guess, if you will, to try to be exact. And so you're relying on staff to put in, you know, to do their time trackers correctly. I was basing off the total budget from environmental health. When we lost those public health dollars, it changed the calculation. So I think that I think this is a good way to start. And then I think it needs to be evaluated on an annual basis. And then we need to start increasing fees based on our cost recovery instead of waiting. I think the last time fees were raised was in 2011. So we don't want to take a big jump every 10 years.
Yeah.
We want to do more incremental increases and use our cost recovery calculations to drive that.
So how frequently do you... Considering that, I was going to ask you that question. How frequently do you anticipate looking at the cost recovery? And
you know, it's not a difficult process. All I'm doing is changing a few numbers.
Right.
So it makes sense to me to look at it on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And I think that if we're close in the neighborhood of 100%, we're probably okay.
Right.
Given the amount of error.
Probably more palatable to add a couple dollars a year than double it every
absolutely
overnight.
Yeah. Doubling the fees, you know, that's
hard.
Impactful and that's hard. And I'd much rather increase the fees incrementally.
Like a question of curiosity, what is or do you even know or what the average cost of an OWTS installation is? Do you have any idea about
that? I think that, I think that 10 to 15 on the low end, and then if you're having to put in a mounted system or, you know, with dosing and a dosing tank and
all
pumps and all that, that you could be up into the close to 30,000.
Okay.
I'd say 25.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
It's been so long, so I'm not sure I even actually knew how much exactly what I paid for mine. All right.
I'm good.
Madam Chair, I would move to accept recommendations from the Rock County Department of Environmental Health to increase OWTS permit fees to $600 for a new permit or a major repair requiring an engineered design, and to $200 for a repair for a minor permit.
Second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
See you back this afternoon.
So I talked to Scott.
Started. Scott, why don't you sit right
okay.
here? Don't be weird.
I just didn't have much.
Yeah, but you can listen.
Sort of a spectator.
It's okay.
Carol, can you?
So in the hierarchy, are these seats? Where are these seats in the hierarchy?
So at the top.
Okay, they're not in the hierarchy.
I would think that the middle is who's presenting, you know,
yeah, that's true.
But otherwise.
Okay, just curious. All right, I guess we're just reconvening the Board of Health following our lunch break.
So before you get started,
I'm happy for you to say whatever you want.
I just wanted to thank Dr. Harrington for the service you've provided to the county in the past and sticking with us and being a part of the public health system moving forward. I mean, it's just really been great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I second that. It's been really nice having more interaction and obligations to healthcare people to be beyond just the walls of our clinic office. So this is a good opportunity for me to hopefully contribute to the community. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a big transition, I think.
Here's a look at Carrie.
Ongoing.
Yeah. Ongoing. Working. We're not done.
I mean, I talk to her at various hours of the day, and she's always working on something.
I appreciate you talking to me at various hours of the day.
Ongoing positive transition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think so, too. Okay. All right. Just tell us what we're doing, Carrie.
All right. So I'm going to start first with just a reminder of our six governance functions of the Board of Health. And that's how I'm structuring the agenda every time. If that structure doesn't work and there's something you'd like me to do differently, just let me know. But
I like it.
Good.
It's nice and orderly.
Okay, good. So the first thing I wanted to talk through, and I think it'll be helpful to have Dr. Harrington weigh in on this too, is our press releases, because we did have the situation with the hepatitis and we wanted to get the word out, and we've kind of had some discussions back and forth about what does that look like, who needs to approve, what's the turnaround on it, all of that. So I just wanted to talk through that with you and see, I guess, what our options are on press releases and who you feel like needs to review and what's a reasonable expectation for turnaround on those.
So first of all, it would help me if you would describe to me the distinction that we made between a press release for hepatitis and for tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm. In the context of...
We didn't do a press release.
How do we decide when information needs to be public?
Yes. So I can more easily do it between E. coli and our outbreak situation with that. And
any way you get me there would be great.
Yeah. So with the E. coli situation, we knew all of the information that we needed to know that it was contained and start that sort of small concentric circle of investigation. And with the hepatitis, it's a statewide outbreak, and we were impacted by that in our local community as part of a larger statewide outbreak. So I think that's one delineation. I don't know if you have something to add on that, too.
Yeah. There's two things I see that you want to do. I mean, you want to have a press release done early enough that it actually prevents other people from getting sick from something. And then, candidly, you want to not be caught behind on some issue, but be in front of it, not behind it.
Yeah.
I would say each of these is kind of an interesting comparison. So first of all, we didn't have a TB case. We had a case that we were worried might be TB.
Right.
That got locked down pretty quickly, and so the threat to the community was minimized at that point. The hepatitis A case is a different deal. Those things spread all over. That has the greatest risk for impacting a lot of people quickly. You know, TB takes months, years. The E. coli one, that has potential for involving other people if you have a source that you haven't identified. But it's also, how do we balance that between that and causing a unnecessary panic? I mean, like the TB thing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to put anything out there just because I wasn't really worried about that with others. And I didn't want some false reactions to either certain members of our community or something like that.
Right.
So how do we, I think, kind of balance that?
And then also with the Hep A, I think the rumor mill was starting. We had people at food establishments talking about it, and so we wanted to try to control that message and not let things start to spread too fast.
And I see the Hepatitis A is the one that we could really build on because we have a public health desire to then piggyback on that and get people immunized, to talk to people in the food industry. To me, that's the clearest one of early, broad communication.
Well, and there's ability for prevention via vaccination, which is different than the other two infections that we're talking about.
Still calls for some judgment.
Yeah,
it's not black and white. Yes, we put out a press release. No, we don't.
I guess one question I would have is if there's kind of a model for a decision tree or something like that.
Well, I see very specific I would say it's pretty prescriptive guidance from CDPHE. So from, in particularly in a tuberculosis situation, it is absolutely do this step, which is entirely different than some other situations where the tuberculosis program happens to be very prescriptive. And so I think that's one thing to consider is that there will be guidance in situations from CDPHE on and in particular, even with hepatitis A, it was outlined. This should be a press release that you get out sooner rather than later, which he also concurred with, and so it all kind of fell into place at the same time.
Well, thanks.
I don't know if that's really a good enough answer, though.
No, no, actually, that was a really great answer. Thank you.
And you know,
I mean, we always long for absolutes, black and whites, but we also get that we live in some gray areas of time.
Well, these things need to be deliberate. There has to be a process of deliberate consideration for the general disease, but for the particular event. And now that the county is kind of owning this, I understand you guys need to be involved in a lot of these decisions to weigh in.
And it was important to really control that message about the E. coli, because that had the potential to impact that business, and we had identified the source, and so there was, you know, it was very intentional the way that was handled. So.
But I guess moving forward, what does this look like as far as who's involved? In Moffitt County, since I work closely with the Moffitt County Commissioners, Commissioner Cook has taken ownership of press release review in a quick fashion, and we turn it around. And then it moves on. But I guess my question is, what does that look like here?
They're just different because they don't have a county manager. So they have staff reports directly to the commissioners, which is a different situation.
So is it, I know, for example, with the bat situation, it was sort of on the back end informing the commissioners. And so I guess that's one model of reviewing it with Dan, and then going on the backside of notifying the commissioners about it once the press release is being prepared, or what does the timing on all this look like?
I think, I'll just voice my opinion on this. I don't see any reason we would need to approve a press release prior to it going out, but I think we would want it before we read it in the newspaper.
Sure.
I mean, that's sort of my general sense.
Yeah, I think we depend on our deputy county manager or county manager to weigh in on these issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, in a situation like that, kind of tell us after the fact what got decided.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it'd be pretty cumbersome if we have to convene the Board of Health every time we need to quickly move on public notice or something.
Because I think that's the other limiting factor is the open meetings rules. And so technically, if you're emailing it to us and we're making a decision, that was a meeting that was not, no, it's sort of a weird, it's a tricky thing to navigate, and it's much easier if we don't have to do that and navigate that.
Okay.
We could make a rubric of sorts to prioritize issues. I mean, I could see something that you talk about, what's the area of impact? Is it small or large? What's the seriousness? Is it large, small or large? Is it rapid or slow in developing? That's probably too much. But, you know, you could come up with a system to try to filter out which ones you want to know about directly.
I think it might be, I think we want to know, with the bat scenario, it's problematic to read about it in the newspaper because we never know when somebody's going to call us or somebody's going to have a question or whatever else. And so we need the opportunity to know that kind of stuff is happening before it's in the general public. But I don't think it's for the purpose of approving the press release. It's just, we don't know, people are going to have questions for us.
We're a board. We're supposed to be involved in the governance, policy, establishing policies, not day-to-day decision-making.
Right.
How you go about doing your job.
Well, and I think to that policy point, it might be helpful to just understand what we believe as an organization. It probably doesn't need to be a formal policy statement, but what we believe warrants a press release, and just kind of having a set of criteria, not necessarily in a really cumbersome way, but just that we know how we're evaluating.
And I can make an argument for more press releases and not fewer. First of all, from the public health perspective, you see an opportunity to get a message out how effective
is something the newspaper I can't say, but we still think that if we're getting the message out, repetition is key to learning. More times people hear about things, that's good. And then the other thing is, I think there's a value for people to understand what their county is doing for public health, and so we should tell them. And these are opportunities for us to tell them what the county is doing.
Yeah. I think also more broadly, I mean, to you guys, I think that Dan's smirking. we just ignore it when he does that. That just a discussion or even a policy, a countywide policy regarding press releases and chain of communications and some of those kinds of things, because I feel like it's coming up more and more, like, who did this go to, who signed off on this, who knows it's happening, and having some kind of...
So what happened? What was happening in the past?
Chaos.
Because, I mean, you know, as 7 years on the Board of Health, we've had three situations that have all occurred within the last 3 or 4 months. The first...
It's Carrie's fault.
Yeah, really.
Well, technically, she was part of it before. So.
Were they issuing press releases for this?
Yeah.
They were.
And some of it was within the context of what they do with their programs. So I think they were viewed as a more independent entity.
Right, sure.
Not as a governmental. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm smirking because they're making the case for the next item and, you know, the need for potentially more of a PIO function, really, you know, and having somebody who's actually both capable of getting those things out and also disseminating that information internally, too. And we have talked with our communication consultant about a process, I'll make sure it's more of a front burner discussion, how we track that information.
I think it makes a lot of sense to have some consistency about how we do those things organization-wide. And I understand there's a lot of immediacy from public health and probably also from emergency operations, but those aren't the only departments that have a need to do these
emergency
things.
Emergency management 101 is... Know how you put out information, what you say, more importantly, what you don't say.
But both of those are proactive, hopefully, functions when you're trying to communicate and put out information. So you're trying to educate the community or inform them about the risks in both situations. So.
And control the information flow.
To the extent you can.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it sounds like out of that, I mean, I hear us having two different discussions. One is that I think we're agreeing that it's fine for you to do what you need to do via Dan or Tom, but that we would like to be informed prior to any information being made public. And then the second is some conversation on more of a countywide basis regarding PIO functions and a process for communications.
Great.
External communications and internal.
Second to that is, as far as case updates, because I know that Eric was involved in getting case updates during some of this, and what does that need to look like as far as the day-to-day sort of case updates on if there's an outbreak, what do you want to know, what do you not want to know, who do you want to receive that information from? I feel like I need a process on that.
Well, I mean, the almost tuberculosis outbreak was pretty instructive, especially how people like me overreacted, or maybe, you know, for lack of a better word, I certainly felt really panicked about what was going on. And then you're bringing in the woman from CDPHE to help, on the one hand, calm us down about what the immediate situation was, but inform us about what the long-term consequences could be. To the extent that we're getting informed, I guess that's all good. But what does that exactly look like? I think it's going to be to every situation. I'm not sure we'll be able to make a matrix. I guess we're going to depend upon you as our public health director to determine, hey, I really need to talk to these guys about this, or B, and I'll just run it by Dan for now. You know.
I thought you did a good job in keeping us updated. I mean, I know that sort of evolved throughout that situation, how you were giving us information and exactly what information you were giving us, and I'm sure you got some guidance on what was confidential and what wasn't. And
so, you know, you made a good point about the email. She sent us some emails that technically became matters of public record the moment they hit our inbox.
Not necessarily. I mean, Cora is not. I mean, you don't have to release public personally identifiable information via her request.
That stuff is not personally identifiable.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't think she's going to send you personally identifying information about any of these things. I mean, these are confidential situations.
Yeah,
I know. But I think she tried to provide essentially like the status update of, you know, is this growing? Is this, you know, what are the risks?
No, but I mean, these guys spoke about the fact that the determination was made that there did not need to be any kind of a public notice about a potential tuberculosis outbreak. But at the same time, we were receiving emails that technically could have been corrupt because they did not contain personally identifiable
information. We were discussing it in a public setting. I mean, anybody could have come in here and listened to what we were saying. So I guess I think probably what you'll find is a tendency to want to know everything from the three of us. And really, it's going to be a matter of you knowing what's appropriate information to give us and what's not. I would think the short of it.
I would think that any call that you get about that, you would want to direct it back to subject matter experts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is it helpful to think about, you know, HIPAA training or something of that nature? You know, what is allowable or, you know,
I've been through that a lot just from top of the hospital networks. Right. But from a global standpoint, it might have been helpful because just the context of where my office is, you know, the planners get interested. What's going on? What's happening? There's just, you know, we'll get you back here. But that's irrelevant. Yeah. I just mean just in general, people chat a little bit. And so is there value in that?
In some of these situations, we'll drag in other departments because, like we have with the TB case, we're issuing an official order of isolation and also everything.
Legal. Yeah.
The neighbor involved with that.
And it's new. It's new to the county to have this sort of buzz around or whatever. I think that's what I recognize is an opportunity for some sort of a workflow of this is how these potentially will be handled in the future.
And I think, you know, if I can, you know, that when we're talking about budget, when we're talking about changes, you know, to potentially add help, you know, it's trying to free you up to have some of these conversations and to think through the process of how to better do it so that, you know, you are more strategic or you're able to kind of build the process instead of dealing with the emergency as you're like, oh, I wish I had time to do that.
Right.
So hopefully that comes maybe beginning of next year.
And I wonder, like these events we've had, do you have a need to know the actual name of the business, or do we try to keep that de-identified? I don't know. It's just a question I have. I mean, it's one of interest, and it might have relevance for other things. On the other hand, maybe you don't need to know. We'll just tell you there's a business that had a Hep A outbreak or something.
I think I think the bias up from us is going to be that we want to know everything. I mean, that really, and it's going to be probably you and honestly Eric to some degree deciding what should be kept confidential from us, what is appropriate for us. I don't know if there's anything that you can tell us that can then be still considered confidential in some way that we could restrict access to that information or not. And that would be more of an Eric question, honestly. I have no idea. And so if by virtue of you telling us it has to be public, then that's going to be a whole different decision than...
So in the case of the E. coli outbreak, it was helpful for us to know the name of the business because it helped us put into context what was going on, geographically knowing where that place was.
But if we had some interest in protecting that confidentiality, and by virtue of telling us that protection is gone, then I think that's we shouldn't know, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, this is all so new.
Sure.
I mean, we're coming out of an era where we knew nothing.
Right.
Now we know a whole lot. And I imagine over time we'll get into that spot. We know what we're doing.
Some of these stories are actually kind of interesting, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's
right.
Technologies. It's a mystery to figure out.
Well, and I think from us, I mean, I think we do feel like being well-informed about these things helps us to do our job and to, you know, serve the public. And so to the extent that we can know and that it's appropriate to, I think we probably want to, but it's determining what that line is.
Yeah, I think Beth alluded to it earlier, especially when it comes to a press release going out. Yeah, I do think we want to read that before it hits the newspaper, so we don't end up just getting surprised. And granted, the answer was probably going to be the same every time you need to talk to our public health director, but still not being caught flat-footed and appearing to be completely ignorant would be helpful.
And I think generally, I mean, we rarely have members of the public or the press in here listening when we're talking, but the reality is we should operate as if we could at any minute, right? We shouldn't be talking about things in a public forum that it wouldn't be okay for a member of the press to be sitting here listening to it. Yep. And we have to recognize that.
We've been deliberate about this. I mean, some of our conversations have been around this exact topic of, you know, should we call somebody up tonight and let you know? We don't need to. We can do that tomorrow, or we don't need to. I mean, we've not been ignorant of kind of... I'm not sure we're right over it, but if we're thinking about it, when do we need to notify
you? All the policy creation in the world will never make up for just using good judgment.
Yeah. So it may, I mean, for you, if it makes you feel most comfortable, it may look like you kind of developing sort of an internal policy for your department about what... how that information goes out and what information is shared with who and that kind of thing.
Good. Great. Thanks. I just wanted to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next, I wanted to give you just an update on, as far as resource stewardship. The state cost assessment is being put together, the report.
Time out for a minute.
Yes.
What is resource stewardship?
Making sure that we're
spending money right.
We're being good stewards of the resources that we're given.
Yeah. Like the grant.
Yeah. So I think we're familiar, the collective we, about the state cost assessment. And so that final report is being put together and presented on Thursday. This Thursday, the big drum roll for the presentation of the report. One thing that did happen that was a little alarming is they showed in the pre-session, they showed a map, and I think Scott was on this call too, but they showed our entire state, and here is Northwest Colorado Health looking like we are really providing cream of the crop public health services, which not that we can't get there and not that we haven't potentially in the past, but at this very moment, at this very time, I have a few concerns about that. So I did contact them. And apparently there was some insertion of dummy data because of the transition we were going through. And so that is problematic for several reasons. And so I'm, in the context of this assessment, working with the Havile consulting firm to see what we can do about that. Because what I don't want to happen is this big report go out amongst all of Colorado, and it appears that, wow, we should look to Northwest Colorado Health as the example of public health service delivery. I definitely have some qualms about that. So in any case, we're working through that. That was a little bit of a...
Although this could be a tenure transition.
Right.
And the nature of that form that we filled out made it difficult to be very specific about, you know...
Yeah, historical data.
Right. Yeah, as soon as I saw that, and I did fill out for environmental health, I was like, oh, you know, I don't know what this is going to look like coming back. And
Now we know what it looks like.
Though, I mean, not... We'll exclude our data, but I mean, the benefit of that report should be that we get good data about comparable programs and things like that. I mean, so we can start to use that to make decisions.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Carrie doesn't want people calling her up from all over the state. How did you guys
How did you do this?
Yeah. Well, or calling Northwest Colorado Health, not calling her.
There's a combination of things. So just to update you on that, we'll work through that. As far as the immunization contract with Northwest Colorado Health, I think we're kind of at one of these crossroads because I think Moffitt County may go one direction with the immunizations contract and Rock County may go a different direction, potentially. And so I guess the concern that was brought forth in Moffitt County that I wanted to talk through is that the changes to the contract, one of which was that I would only be allowed to see the data or audit the data four times a year, and spot checks were not allowed. That was a piece of it that Moffitt County was not comfortable with. And I have a certain level of discomfort with that, too. And so I think at this point, if we make the decision that we're staying in this relationship, in this contractual, I would just like to ask that possibly consider? Is this a contract that we'd like to look for an RFP in the future to be put out in next year sometime?
So they haven't even signed the contract, have they?
So I don't know the I don't know the current situation with Route County. I do know that the deliberations are still going on in Moffitt County, and it's sort of taken a not so.
What's the term of that contract?
Through June, the end of June.
Through the end of June.
Yeah, so it actually
They're
currently under contract.
Except they didn't.
They haven't. There hasn't been a signature in either county on that contract.
And when did the, when was the beginning of the contract?
July 1st.
Are we paying them for this right now?
So my understanding is that there will be payment, payment for its service delivery based on an understanding that that service was being provided.
But why would we pay them for a contract that hasn't been signed yet?
Because I think we needed to start the service. You know, we, you may remember, we made a very quick transition on a lot of these things.
I don't remember that, Dan.
Yeah. Please remind me. It's seared in my memory. and that required or necessitated some level of trust that they were going to sign it, and essentially we needed to iron that out. We didn't necessarily anticipate a couple months down the line to be here, but... That was.
But do we have any evidence that they've been providing the service?
I think to a certain degree.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. So there are 317 of the VFC vaccines that have been ordered and been provided. So I feel confident that that is happening.
They're doing something.
Yeah.
Explain 317.
I've got a question.
I just assumed that.
Which I already know the answer to, but okay. I just want to get it on the record.
Sure.
this is not a service that we can provide in house.
If we had a nurse, we probably could.
Immunization.
So.
Well, maybe I didn't know the answer.
So there,
I could be wrong.
Okay, so there are things that would have to be, you know, we'd have to have a refrigerator for the vaccines. We would have to apply for a PIN. There's billing, a billing component of it.
Insurance billing, right?
Yeah, there are different parameters that we would have to meet to be viable a viable option. But. We've had conversations about, is there the opportunity for a Route County nurse to partner with a clinic and then work out some type of relationship there?
So some of the vaccines are kind of routine things. So VFC vaccines for children, a lot of that's making sure all our kids get immunized, and that's more of a routine, non-routine thing. Then you have issues like the hepatitis A outbreak where you're trying to rush quickly to get a bunch of vaccinations out. And it works best with that kind of situation is go to where the people are.
Okay.
So, you know, we can do the kid stuff and have them come into places, but for the hepatitis A, it works well to have somebody go to restaurants, capture people during work shifts, and get them immunized. That kind of stuff is more of an ad hoc, short notice thing. So you want a resource that can be nimble enough to say, oh, yeah, we got somebody tomorrow that can come over. So it's not, part of it is, do you have the actual vaccines? The other part of it is do you have the people available? And so there's a, you know, a couple clinics at least in town that have the resources to maybe do some of this stuff. I mean, we've already been doing some things like they ran out of syringes last week. You know, my clinic's got plenty of syringes. We can, so there's some things there, but the personnel thing, you know, like if you came to us and said, hey, we need to do hepatitis A vaccinations this week. I might say, you know, our nurses are all full this week.
Yeah.
We'd have to cancel something. So there's personnel and there's the resources. Our clinic, for example, we have VFC vaccine. We already do that. The 317, the adult vaccine program, probably somebody can get registered for that. But then there's still the personnel side of it. And we've started to brainstorm a little bit about options.
So is this contract a flat fee or is it on a service delivery?
It's not a fee for service. It's a contractual amount that's received. And the payment, actually, interestingly, from CDPHE is on a quarterly basis based upon a report that the agency needs to fill out. And so there's been emails back and forth about who's, since we don't have a signed contract, who's filling out the quarterly progress report so that we can draw down the funding. So that's how that works.
So what are the requirements for the agency if they are granted that contract? Like, if what if, for example, if we did go out for an RFP, like right. what would it say that they're signing on to do?
It would be all the deliverables that are in the statement of work,
which are what I guess is my question.
Just like 30 odd.
Yeah, and yeah, there's quite
just broadly, I
but guess. But just the provision of the VFC vaccine to children, the 317 vaccine. Also, there's an outbreak response deliverable in there, which has been
That's the point of contention
recently because I've done a workaround in order to get places vaccinated because of a lack of, I guess, response or support in providing that outbreak response because we're still in that gray area of is this communicable disease or is this immunizations, standard immunizations. So, the whole model of it, I totally agree with Dr. Harrington. I would love to create more of a routine kind of things can happen in a clinic, but also have that option to go out into the community and do some really efficient outreach and education about it. And I'm struggling a little bit on that with the current provider. So that's why I would like to look for the RFP to look different moving forward.
So, well, have we done an RFP before for this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that seems obvious to me that why wouldn't we do an RFP? And then whoever does it is doing it because they want to do it.
Right.
And we're not playing this game of...
Well, from a reporting standpoint as well, there's a lot of reporting that I need from whomever the provider is about, you know, the number of immunizations in order to make sure contractually that we're meeting these deliverables. And so that's been a point of contention too. Without the signed contract, then I can't get the documentation that I need to submit to the state. And so that puts us in this weird auditing limbo without that signed contract. So it's just a... it's unfortunate right now.
So people that are currently seeking immunizations, they would go to Northwest Colorado Health, and then Northwest Colorado Health would determine what their eligibility was for free vaccination or whether or not they were going to bill them through Medicaid or Medicare or through private insurance.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, they need to become established patients over there as well for that.
Plus or minus. I mean, all the clinics in town give vaccines to anybody who walks in their door. And you can either bill it to insurance or Medicaid or Medicare, or you can pay cash. And while these two vaccination programs, for example, are subsidized to give basically free vaccinations, most of the people getting vaccinations have some kind of coverage. But we do want to make it possible that everybody can get vaccination, regardless of being able to document something.
And so, which is why we pay money to Northwest Colorado Health to cover those people that would otherwise be unable to pay.
Well, you're paying for two things. You're paying for the vaccines, and you're paying for the people, the roof, the lights, whatever.
Well, and it sounds like Terry would prefer if part of what we're paying them for is really to do outreach and not just if you come to our clinic, you can get a vaccine, but really doing some education and community type services.
Is that one of the required task order items, or is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in there as part of the statement of work. And so it can be loosely covered by a few flu shot clinics, but really, what I would like to see is the intent behind it is how are we going to get the most people vaccinated in our community and what's the most efficient manner to do that? You know what I mean? It's philosophical, I guess, in a sense, too.
It feels obvious to me that you would design a contract that states the work that you would want to see completed in addition to what's required by the state and then it go out to an RFP and we have a provider that is going to be
I mean, you give the LICAP capabilities to do, if we're talking vaccinations, to be able to do whatever vaccination, go to the people, go to the community, and increase the amount of opportunity for people to get to, for example. And so that, to me, that's the wall to climb there is primarily a staffing or personnel one. The vaccines and the supplies, that's all. I mean, we have that stuff here already. That's probably not the challenge. It's how do you create a staffing scenario where people could a couple days a week be going somewhere. And what we've done in the past, and you know, Northwest Colorado does this to some degree, they'll do vaccination programs at schools, at certain businesses. Some clinics we've done this in the past, we'll go to daycare centers or you know, do flu clinics or whatever. So those we have all those kind of examples of just how do you create the opportunity to have people available.
So practically it still makes sense to go out for an RFP rather than thinking in terms of self-performance. Because we'd have to hire a bunch of people.
Probably not a bunch of people, but we'd have to have...
We'd have to hire more than what we've currently budgeted to hire.
Yeah. Say you had I use a nurse. You'd have a nurse in, who's staffed in the department. And, you know, one day a week, that's their deal. They're going somewhere and doing vaccination programs, if we thought that that was a worthwhile use of it. But in my mind, that would be an example. I could see that working. Not necessarily a full-time thing. Just have one person, because you can't.
Right.
Kind of
well, are you a nurse anyway? I mean, you can't administer vaccines.
Pardon?
No, I'm not a nurse.
Carrie can't administer
right.
vaccines anyway.
No, but anyway, it looks like we're probably going to be granting your budget request. I'm not going to commit to that yet. But
so excited.
It looks like we have not yet decided. So we will have a full, theoretically have a full-time nurse on staff, but that would that be beyond that individual's capacity?
No. I sort of gotten the impression, I would say, that the county wasn't interested in direct service model type work, and so I don't know. I mean, we can definitely explore it. We are in Moffat County.
I think my exact words were, we were not going to stick needles in people's arms.
I think that's where I got that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that
who said
based,
that?
I
he did.
Oh. And that was based on, you know, the way we were taking over the program and really not going into a healthcare model.
They're contracting apples.
For us, yeah. Either contract or, you know, figuring out a staffing model that worked. But I think initially that was the mandate I was given is no, we're not.
Yeah, well, this is a rapidly evolving thing, obviously.
I'm actually way more inclined to put this out to RFP and have a provider in the community do this, and that doesn't mean it might not change down the line, but the idea of like the county getting set up to be able to bill insurance and to all these kinds of things, you know, it doesn't mean we could never go that direction, but I think for right now, let's go with the people who already do this and know how to do this and contract with someone at least for the short term.
So practically speaking, we're going to muddle through with our current arrangement and or contract, whatever you want to call it, through the end of June, but we'll need to be putting out an RFP sometime in February or March if we're looking for it.
But is that true if we don't even have a signature on this contract? I mean, what obligation do we have to Northwest Colorado if they're not willing to sign the contract?
Well, it's not so much an obligation. We don't have the capacity right now to do anything different.
We could put out an RFP.
But we have to look at our current. I mean, we're not under contract. The contract ended.
And they didn't sign a new one.
There would be opportunities in our community with other clinics or the hospital who would have the capability of doing most, if not all, these services.
But even at that, I mean, here we are in the middle of October. You know, by the time we get an RFP out, you're going to be in November. I mean, even January 1st feels a little aggressive to get something done. And I'm not opposed to that.
I would say we're working incrementally through this implementation rather than
huh?
Right. He takes issue with the use of the word muddle.
Oh, so we're working incrementally through this transition.
I mean, what are your thoughts, I guess, about how we transition this to just putting it out for RFP? I mean, what do you do in the meantime?
No, I'm full well that Northwest Colorado Health might be the successful bidder.
Yeah, but they have to be willing to sign the contract before they can be the successful bidder.
I think we weren't clear, about what we expected. You know, I mean, it was really like a medical term here, Band-Aid. You know, I mean, it was like trying to just make sure we had a provider for that needed service. And we always intended to do an RFP. I think the question is what the RFP would look like and how long a term are we talking about in the sense, I mean, we get an annual allocation and it's in a cycle that's not matching our budget cycle, so you're going to be overlapping, you know, the budget year, you know, with whomever, unless you do a multi-year.
But wait a minute, you're talking about we weren't clear about what we wanted. I think it was clear enough to me. We wanted what we've been doing for the last X number of years.
Continuity, yeah.
But so that's clear enough, isn't it?
Well, but I think that we also weren't clear about the service level. I mean, in the philosophy, I think, to Carrie's point about what, you know, what that looks like, what was being provided and what we expect to be provided when it comes to the service.
Because you're making the case that we didn't know what was being provided in the past, so it was hard for us to say what we wanted in the future.
I mean, it seems like that's borne out in other areas of this enterprise, so yeah, I think I
am. But then it should have been, in my view, it should have been clear to Northwest Colorado Health that we wanted to continue what we'd been doing. Why would that be confusing to anybody?
Because, I mean, I think, you know, based on the fact that we haven't had an agreement signed, it seems to be.
They already have planned their, I think they have some flu clinics at schools that are planned. They're already sort of in the motions of this season. And I feel like out of respect to them for the service provision that they have provided in the past, I think it would be reasonable to continue that relationship with the intention that we're going to put in RFP. Yeah, that would be my preference, because I feel like any other model is going to be rushed, and I would like to be really strategic about what the options are and the caveats of those options.
Why won't they sign the contract?
There is, I think there's some concern about the auditing or the accountability, is my understanding.
So why would we pay them if they don't sign the contract? I mean, what are we paying them for?
Right.
Well, I mean, they have provided at least a few months of service.
Yeah, but there's lots of other people in this community who are providing vaccines as well that we also don't have a contract with.
So legally, Beth, the people are providing a service to you, and you know that they're providing a service to you, whether or not you have a contract, you're still obligated to pay them for
that service.
No,
I understand what you're saying, but they're not the only organization in this community that is providing vaccinations. So what makes the things that they're doing and planning a service to us versus what everybody else is doing?
But until today, at least, they've provided a service, so we sure as hell owe them for the service that they provided.
But they're not willing to report on what they've done.
They are willing to report just quarterly.
Quarterly, not on a spot.
On a spot check basis. Got it. So.
Or monthly or any other.
So I guess maybe the
Band-Aid,
if you will, is just saying, okay, fine, and we're going out for an RFP next time, and no one's going to be granted the contract unless they're willing to agree to these.
That would be a business
There's no reason why we couldn't go out for an RFP now and just let them know that we're doing that, and they can provide a proposal.
Well, I think I just heard Carrie say that, I don't know, I guess, are you thinking that continuing with Northwest, you said continue with Northwest Colorado Health, but you didn't state a specific time frame. So are you thinking through June, through the time that contract should be in effect, or are you thinking shorter than that?
No, I'm thinking through June, because I feel like any preparations for any other model need to be thought through without there being an impact to the community or to whatever. I feel like it would be rushed in another day.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
So really, you're looking at the RFP would need to go out in like February or March, right, sign a contract by the end of June.
And also, if we are to have a contract signed here, the guidance I've received from FRMS, who does the auditing, is really that if you have a subcontractor, there's steps that you need to take documenting performance or lack of performance or documentation. And so I would like to follow that model in order to substantiate any decision making moving forward.
Yeah. That makes sense. So are you going to be able to get their signature on this contract?
I'm leaving that to Dan.
I mean, if you just say, fine, we're not doing spot checks, will they sign it? Do I understand that correctly?
I don't know. I mean,
okay.
I think that makes sense, that would be the, you know, if that's the sticking point we're willing to give on it, then I would assume they would sign it. But
that keeps us in compliance.
Well, and just continuity, like you said, I mean, making sure the services are being provided, but knowing the time frame to have an RFP and have a contract in place with whether it's them or someone else by July 1st, right?
The funding for the immunization program, mm-hmm. is at 100% passed through state funding. Mm-hmm. So
it's like $33,000.
So the RFP we would issue would be for that dollar amount.
I would assume so.
We would be putting out an RFP to provide these services for that dollar amount.
So well, how do you determine
yes.
who...
We'd have to give them the sample, show them the sample or the state contract.
And so then I guess the eventuality you have to be prepared for is that no one responds. Mm-hmm. And now you are going to have to self-perform. Mm-hmm.
Well, not necessarily.
To moving, you know, not waiting until February or March to issue an RFP and doing it sooner rather than later. I don't
I think you have a better pulse on what the interest probably would be in the community. I feel like it would be a great thing for providers, potentially.
I think that some of the clinical entities in town would be interested in it. I think if probably the more larger entities with enough staff, you know, would have the flexibility to do a little more of this. A few of us, you know, clinics have already do all this vaccine stuff. Like I said, we have a BFC fridge. You know, we already have that stuff, and I'm sure Pete the Steamboat, I think SMG probably has that. I could be missing somebody.
The hospital, so, presumably,
the hospital.
Right?
So, yeah. So I think there are entities. I mean, I'd say ours might be interested. You know, we'd have to see what's required, but I think there's opportunity there.
I guess the other question I have about it is if one of the main things that needs to happen is the ability to respond to outbreaks, is there an opportunity to have multiple providers, kind of a network of folks that could respond, and maybe there is a fee for service for just that portion, but you have some people contracted that are available, you know, potentially available, right?
Yes.
Would that
so
be an option?
I think other counties have done that where the outbreak response is kind of it's broken out from the standard routine vaccinations. And so those are sort of two, it's a subcontract. And you
hold some of that money for that purpose.
Yeah. Let's talk about using that model for the nursing program, just generally, like trying to have backups for outbreaks or other things where we would need to kind of ramp up. So.
Do we have the opportunity to get additional funding from CDPHE to support those expenses for outbreak control?
Well,
or because obviously, if we have some kind of big outbreak and we've got to call these people in, someone's got to pay them.
It's kind of funny. You know, like last week, they brought a nurse up from Denver.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to pay for that.
And some of it comes through emergency preparedness as well. Like for outbreak response, there's funding available through emergency preparedness for reimbursement. Yeah.
But it wouldn't be like a pot of money that we use and allocate. It would be the state has money available.
And we request assistance. And that's what happened. We didn't have the capacity to deal with it, and so that's why we got that support.
It feels like this conversation is supporting Carrie's desire to maintain the status quo, give ourselves some time to get an RFP together so that we could look at going out for something that would be effective July 1, 2020.
Right. And I want to get some more data. So for example, like with Ski Corps, Heather has helped me with, I wanted to see what the uninsured population of Ski Corps employees is, and then, you know, what the outreach could look like, as well as the food handlers, and so I have some data. I want to pull some data together to be thoughtful about when an RFP goes out, what is it specifically that we're looking for, and who is our target audience, and all that. So
continuing with this Colorado Health for now would give you the time that you need to put that together over the next few months, presumably.
Yeah.
Great, we're through number two of six things.
Okay, great.
I'll move quickly. The other thing I need some clarification on is legal authority, because Jim and I are working on these emergency preparedness plans. And as far as depth for the organization, I don't know if we even are trying to put together an organizational chart. Like, who is the backup for me to initiate emergency plans? Is that you, Dan?
For public health emergency.
For the public health emergency plans, in order to activate those. Well, he's definitely in there as a medical officer for isolation orders, signatures, and all of that. Are you willing to be the backup again for me for the initiation? Yeah.
Ready to amend that?
Who else would it typically be within an organization?
If there's a staff.
The designated public health.
Yeah.
The assistant director. Could Scott be a person? Like, I guess I just don't know who it would usually need to be.
Or presumably hire this individual.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about just between now and even January.
Right.
What does this look like? Who is this person?
I think whoever you tell us should be the backup. Yeah. I don't want to be the backup. Whoever Carrie tells us should be her backup.
Well, I mean, it seems like Dr. Sternchuk would be the ideal candidate, right?
What's that?
Would the state have any preference on that, you think?
No. This is just
internal.
It's internal. Okay. But, I think if you're okay with it,
I feel like probably.
Okay, and then if you're out of town, which you can't.
Yeah, we've talked about that too.
Yeah.
Some other people. And then the other thing I just want to say to you guys, at times put your hats on and support health. Does that put you in that chain of authority?
We'd probably have to convene as the Board of Health, though, before in order to have any
like,
authority.
Like, if you were out of town and we needed isolation orders, would it come to you to put your Board of Health hat on? Is that what would happen?
You're talking about a signature?
For a signature.
There's an order for that for signatures.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get another doc to be my backup, but you probably need to have some kind of official agreement.
It's not someone that we have a contract with, right?
Because, you know, like one of my partners has a public health degree, Michelle Jefferson. She likes public health. You know, she probably loves some of this.
I mean, it's probably preferable if it's an employee or someone like Dr. Harrington who we have a contract with, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's us.
No, I think
because
we'd
have
really
to have a meeting. We'd have to have an emergency
meeting. Well,
no,
that we don't have the expertise.
Well, it's just
that. On whose advice would we be?
We don't take advice from professionals, so.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering then, would it be Dr. Harrington that it would fall to Dan, potentially?
That's what I was
sure
probably.
This is thrown on Dan.
He can make some of it, you know, if you're on tank.
He can make some
conversations that you can't sign.
Right.
It could be an interim thing anyway until we get more established.
Yeah. I just need something to put in these plans for right now. So that
It makes sense to me that the county manager's office, whether it's Dan or Dom or either of them, would be.
Because they have the ability to.
We can ask Eric if there's legal ability to do like a verbal order for some things. You know, like if somebody's out, if I was out of town, you need me to sign something, I can do something on the phone, maybe.
Yeah.
So we might just ask him on that again.
Oh, no, we're down on it. Okay.
Yeah, like is there a way that you could just, someone could indicate that you had.
Right. Okay. The next thing is that I wanted to give you an update if you want to just eyeball these real quick. These are just our current rates for these different things. Dr. Harrington's aware, but we have had one hospitalized flu case. And those are all the other things that we've had.
She started a little bit early this year.
Yeah.
Is that early?
Yeah. I mean, we had a positive test in our clinic and maybe some others too here.
Maybe I better not wait to get my flu shot.
You should get it. Well, I was going to just wait until our flu clinic.
When is it? The end of this month?
Mm-hmm.
30th.
The 30th.
That's not too far out.
There are four hospitalizations as of
this
morning.
Is it too far out?
It's time.
Okay. I always take my son for his, because his birthday's at the end of
October. So the status here today,
mm-hmm.
Do we have comparable data from last year?
No, but I can easily get it.
No, that's all right.
Well, the first reported case for 2017-18 was on January 2nd, 2018.
For flu, you're mm-hmm. talking about.
That might not be a bad idea going forward, though.
Historical.
Do a comparison.
We have four on the second pages are the...
So all of this pertains to the flu. These
three.
Yes. Hospitalized by case. Yeah. And just so you know, because you're
making... All of these people were hospitalized? Or just...
Well, these are from the hospital lab. We don't actually collect information from them.
Okay. So if it's from the hospital lab, then it's reasonably comprehensive.
Well, it's going to be the same test sometimes we do in the clinic, but those are going to be people in the ER who are admitted. So
the
some
whole
degree.
List or just the flu?
Just the flu.
Just the flu.
Yeah. These are other diagnoses that have come through.
And these are reportable.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone goes to the doctor... If I get bit by a dog and I go to my personal physician, this has to be reported to CDPA. That has to be reported to CDPA.
That's a loose thing. The clinics are not very strict on it. I guess most of them don't even report stuff.
But they're supposed to?
Well, they should.
Okay.
They're not obligated.
Okay.
And that's partly an education thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is not necessarily comprehensive data.
No, it's a sentinel. This is a sentinel.
Okay.
For the hospital is a sentinel for particular.
Okay.
What's the second one? I've never heard of that. Or maybe I have. I don't know what it is.
That's a common, actually foodborne, but a common bacterial GI infection.
Oh, okay.
It's actually been on the rise in the U.S. in recent years.
Does it have a common name, or is this how people refer
Campy.
To it?
Campy.
Campy.
Campylobacter.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to give you the Colorado flu report, which we are going to work on getting out on Facebook, I think, just so people can be aware of how many hospitalizations there are and what the outbreak looks
this
like.
This is statewide?
Yep.
So one of these hospitalizations was in Round County?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And we have we're very fortunate. I think our infection preventionist at UC Health is really good too about reporting.
Yeah. But the hospital has an actual nurse whose job is infection stuff, and she really gets into it.
She does get into it. So.
Does she want to run vaccine clinic?
She's great. And then we don't have time right now, but this is the.
So you get over hepatitis A. There is a percentage of adults who can die from it or have permanent sequelae.
And you don't get over hepatitis B.
No, not easily. Now, hepatitis C, we have very good treatments now if you have $100,000 a year. That's the medicine cost.
So just as far as our response, we are vaccinating approximately 50 inmates at the Rapp County Jail on Monday, and then also 45 in Moffitt County.
Who's we?
I'm going in to provide the education, and then two nurses from CDPHA are coming with me. So...
But theoretically, we would have liked this to be covered by our vaccine.
Correct. But we wanted it. We wanted to get it done.
I understand.
Yeah. So, in addition to that, continuous improvement. Dr. Harrington, I invited to a CIDR meeting, which we are going to. The infection preventionists from both counties and emergency preparedness. We have a great CIDR team. We're going to debrief on these outbreaks that we had. Community infectious disease emergency response.
Thank you.
Which has been fantastic in these recent events that we've had to be able to have response really quickly from the hospitals. And so we're going to debrief on these and just do basically a hot wash of what went well, what can we improve upon, were there communications that could have been better, just to really take a detailed look at the outbreaks and just do better in the future for residents. So that is happening. And then the last thing is the chat process and discussion about the subcontract that I talked about in the budget. I'm meeting with them on Thursday to go through the statement of work on that. To get that initiated through the health partnership, the subcontract.
And we're starting that this year, not waiting until next year.
We're starting that this year with the goal of end of December. She thought it was too tight to try to finish it by the end of November because we just, time-wise. So the goal is to get it done by the end of December.
So are we going to be signing a contract?
It is going to be in your queue along with the signed medical officer agreement that we know. Yeah, too. Okay. Anything else?
I congratulate you. You guys are doing public health now. Good job.
You too. Hey.
It's working. And, I mean, a couple of kudos are out there. I mean, Community Broad, they were very helpful with our hospital TV case. We had extensive contacts and... We have some phone interpretive services, but the community guide was there to be present too for things, and that was very helpful. You guys hit a home run. Carrie's doing it. I'm very impressed. I've done very little. She's doing all this. She's talking with the public health department. She's fully responsible. I'm excited where public health stuff is going.
I think we are too. I think I feel a lot better, at least in knowing what it was. That we were supposed to be doing, and now we're not only knowing what we're supposed to be doing, but knowing what we are doing. It's kind of,
well, and feeling like overall, while there are some bumps, this is resulting already and will even more so in the future in improved services to the community.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier, I mean, we did not once, not twice, but three times got hit with something that is not typical.
Short time.
This was an unusual constellation of.
We blamed it on her.
That's what I've been told.
So we probably learned more in the last month than we would have otherwise, just because the situations have forced us to do it.
But it's been great to be able to partner with Environmental Health, and Dan has been super supportive and responsive. And
you didn't have a choice.
Well, it's okay, though. I'm thankful for it anyway. So it takes a village on this one.
Well, I also think sometimes when you absolutely positively have to do something, you go out and do it. Instead of something, maybe someday we ought to do that, you know.
We're just resenting the fact that you have to do it in the first place.
Well, I think the difference, at least for me, was I wasn't resentful that we had to do it. I was just more mad at myself for not knowing what had been going on in the past.
Right. Cool.
we're getting to a good place.
Well, I mean, this has focused our attention on response, right? We've had these kind of emergencies. How do we contain potential outbreaks and stuff like that? As we learn all this stuff, too, it'll be important to get back a little bit, too, to kind of how we keep us a healthy community
right.
in terms of preventive stuff, social determinants of health, and all those things, too.
Absolutely. Well, and I thought that, I mean, obviously, that Frank last night was very adamant about mental health, but it just, I think there's some opportunities to be really mm-hmm. proactive around the supports we provide in the community mm-hmm. in a way in which we're supporting health mm-hmm. and of the public, right? Mm-hmm. Tim can't wait to bring communities that care in-house. Just joking.
More perfect.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Bad bites because we have Halloween coming up. Clown bites.
Yeah, right.
I think last month, because once we finalized some of the messaging and outreach efforts, and we'll be doing that later this week, a lot of this will get transferred over to the land use plan. So right now, the November plan on the left is pretty general. But I think as we get closer to getting the thumbs up on all of these activities, some of it will, of course, sift into the ultimate plan here on the left. So I can keep that up, or if it's kind of distracting, I can just do them.
Yeah, whatever. We're easily distracted.
Yes,
but
yes,
I just
yes.
Well, then let's just start with our November theme, which is sound land use and infrastructure. And we're starting with the key messages, which really were pulled from that master plan engagement strategy. A lot of them were. And just want to, as usual, pick your brains a little bit about some of the core messaging that we need to include, as well as some particular projects or ideas that you want to make sure are captured in the coming months. So let's start with the big ideas. Land planning is complex and affects everyone. Land use and zoning determines how residents use and interact with land, and it determines the purpose of a property and therefore what's allowable, what isn't. Route County land use and zoning policies are designed to maintain the rural character and heritage of our community. And land use regulations in unincorporated Route County differ from regulations on land in cities and towns. And then, of course, there's some specific reference to where Route County will update the master plan.
I'm
sorry, Tim, go ahead.
I would replace the word Jennifer with our estate. Our
yeah. That's great. Right, because sometimes they are, some of them are the same.
You may even want to say that there's cooperation on those policies and implementation, to a certain degree at least.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that you could know. One, my understanding is that it's not fully unique, but it's somewhat unique the way in which our master plan works together with the sub-area plans in terms of agreements about where development will happen and some of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It's rolling his eyes, but I heard Rebecca Bessie say that the other day. So.
Well, I think the detail of it is unique, but I think that that concept is
okay.
Right? You know, so I mean, we've made it unique in how we make them work. Right?
But the county has essentially agreed to limit development and drive it.
Right. We don't have to talk about it being unique. We just need to talk about the fact that it exists at all.
I guess my point is that I think it to me, it's interesting that it's unique, though, that, it, you know, we don't necessarily do it. Everybody doesn't do it the way we do it.
That's not always a good place.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, personally.
Yeah.
The other message I think could be out there is why land use planning matters, kind of that idea of cumulative impacts, and it allows you to evaluate individual applications for development against a long-term vision for the community rather than considering one-offs.
So it's almost bringing it more personal here. Like master plans and land use, you know, allow Front County to evaluate development and projects. Oh my goodness, my fingers go way too fast. There we go, project.
In relation to
the
long-term housing
in line with the,
I think we talked in that other plan and that the one underneath about the idea that, of informing the community about what maybe land use policies are and land use generally.
Just might, what types of things would fall in the category of land use?
Well, and what, you know, what might be covered by the master plan in some ways, right? Like what influence it has. I don't know that that's a... 140 characters.
Yeah, I always struggle a little bit with that. What are the right examples to use that really bring it home for people? I think the idea of density does.
Definitely density. I mean, and related to density is where development will occur and what types of development occur in what places.
I mean, I think that's permissions. Right. It's how permissive is it, or impermissive, if that's a word?
I don't think so. Restricted?
Yeah.
No. Permissive?
Yeah.
Sorry. We don't have to go in this direction, but I think it's interesting to highlight some of the tools that we've used to protect this vision, like the land preservation subdivisions and the purchase of development rights.
Yeah, it's almost like, how do you make a plan or a vision come to life?
Land preservation subdivisions are one, and then purchase of development rights is the other. And we could obviously have some detail about what we would share about those programs.
Yeah, that's great.
So on the third paragraph from the top, the one that's Brown County Land Use and zoning policies designed to maintain the rural character and heritage and open space.
Yeah. I might even get rid of heritage. I don't know. Heritage feels really protectionist.
Actually, I think this is agricultural heritage.
Yeah, I'd say agricultural heritage.
There you go. That works.
Yeah. That's nice.
I like all those things.
I like all these things. This is a good one.
The only other maybe is why we're updating the master plan. I think reference to it as a community document, and
we don't argue about it.
No, we're not going to argue about it. It is a community document, period.
You still argue with us.
Well, we can even learn about it via social media.
Yeah.
And just the importance of having community input and feedback on a regular basis.
Yeah.
We're not arguing with anybody about that.
Somewhere, I'm not exactly sure where, but we need to include how our land use policies help to preserve wildlife and the environment.
And even just a statement in there about the minimum 35-acre lot size. You know.
Yeah, and I put that one down in the specifics, but yeah. I think that is such a core piece.
It is a really core piece. Here for now. Yes. Well, and I mean, related to the minimum 35-acre lot size, it's not the exact same thing, but there is some relationship, is the agreement, especially with the city of Steamboat, but really with all the municipalities, that we're not allowing subdivisions within the county.
Well, that's not actually true. I mean, it's... We do allow
traditional subdivision?
We do allow subdivisions that are less than 35 acres. We don't absolutely...
So maybe it's on a limited basis? Or,
it's been a while.
I mean, what...
It's been a while.
I mean, technically speaking, it's a tiny home.
You can't say that our master plan, our zoning regulations absolutely preclude...
You approved those 5-acre subdivisions on the top of that Young's Peak. That was State's coach. Just well, you're moving that toward that.
It's a designated growth area,
and there's nothing else suitable. I mean, you're not going to you're not going to have high density up on top of that.
Still, someone could theoretically come to the county and say they had 100 acres. With a proposal to divide and subdivide them into 10-acre parcels. As a matter of fact, we reviewed back in 2013 or 14 that subdivision that's out west of
Steamboat 2.
Steamboat 2. They have actually made it to
the
commission.
So it's maybe more a part of our vision rather than it is in our regulations that
right.
It's prohibited.
That's the way I put it.
Because I was looking at the WhatsApp the other day for various reasons, and well, mostly because I was asked to give a presentation to leadership team about it. But it does say in there that we will not allow subdivisions inside the WhatsApp area, inside the urban growth boundary, that
that's
they would have to be annexed. But it's not in the regulations. It's really just an agreement as far as the vision.
35-acre, I mean, that's minimum use by, I mean, 30 is a minimum you can subdivide by state law.
Well, I think Eric would say that it's technically it's not a subdivision unless it's less than 35 acres. Okay, 35 acres is outside the definition of a subdivision. That's what Eric would tell you. I'm
well, you
sure.
Can take 100 acres.
Well,
this is
105 acres and subdivided into three parcels.
Well, this is remember the whole conversation with the Johnson. And how Eric is saying it's not a subdivision.
He was trying to protect us on one particular project.
But he said it's not a subdivision. That's why it doesn't have to be platted. They can do the meets and bounds. And
we can allow it to happen without being sued.
Don't get into that.
We've gone on a tangent here.
We're not going to attempt to pass it.
Yeah. So we can say that, right? Local governments work together to realize the vision of Brown County. We have an agreement with the city of Steamboat and others that the county will limit development of subdivisions in unincorporated Brown.
That's why we hired you, Ken. You got the right.
I got it. I think that's correct.
You guys go off on your conversations. I can hopefully capture it quickly.
You did a good job.
And then this one will do. So you will see in this, there's some random burner bird stuff. Honestly, that's just because of timing. It probably should be in this plan, but more just in our planning document that we use for coordination with the communications team.
It's internally. Right?
So, yeah.
Broadly.
Yeah.
But I think you have to have a mix of what's timely and what's on message for what we're trying to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's oh, my gosh.
So we do have some specific road and bridge. We do have, we'll add some things about the tools and the 35-acre lot size. We just added this piece here. The population growth is kind of terrifying, and I wonder if that will just freak
people out. I was just going to say that exact same thing. There's so much rhetoric right now about how many or too many, and shouldn't we stop this growth, and shouldn't we cut it off? Because we don't have enough space for all these people. And I don't know if we want to start that.
I kind of, maybe I just want to do this.
Well, the demographics
and
show that
maybe
we're
we just build something into, you'll see I have these little placeholders
that's
from the master plan engagement
code. From the state demographics.
And again, that is building off of the engagement plan where we're asking people more about what do they love about Route County and doing it in a fun and an interactive way that kind of helps us determine some broad priorities and broad preferences in preparation for the true master plan effort that kicks off next year. So maybe instead of just doing that horribly terrifying population number, we do something along the lines of like, our community is changing and evolving and it's important to get involved.
Rock County is committed to mitigating the impacts of the broader population.
I mean, in that part about why planning is important, I mean, it's definitely about managing growth. So there could be some...
Oh, I like that.
People like it when we talk about managing growth.
Yeah. I almost feel like it's here, up in the core messages.
Right.
Start growth control.
I don't think we use the word control, but manage, I mean, definitely it's about managing.
Well, that was the problem back in, after 2003 or whatever it was, we did the last city community plan update, and we couldn't get that one GO initiative moving along because there was a division between growth management and growth control.
Yeah, which continues to be
the case. It continues to be the case.
So I'm going to hit on some of the highlights here. So again, we're drawing people's attention to the article, but also just some infrastructure pieces. So talking about the airport and their release of the winter flight schedule, asking people to be prepared for snow. These are kind of the seasonal pieces. But really, each week we want to make sure that we set aside a that supports the engagement plan in addition to just some of the education that we're doing around what is the master plan and why do we need one.
Yep.
Then we have a little shout out to our building department and how they serve beyond, they serve everyone, roughly. And then, of course, it's sort of where we're going to redo this content, both on the website and within the pilot ad and so on and so forth.
Don't we also serve the building department for YAMBA?
Yes.
Let's not leave YAMBA out.
Yeah.
Seems very slight.
Yeah. Like a slap in the face for YAMBA.
I mean, they're the only other one, so we might as well just include them.
It's not much. It's not.
So I know this is kind of master plan heavy and land use, of course, but is there anything else that is specific, whether it's a program, a service, an acknowledgement that we want to make sure we hit on as part of this theme?
I don't know if we want to specifically focus on the master plan, which if we do, I think that's fine. But I always just think it's so nice to shout out to the Road and Bridge Department, like the number of miles of road they plow every winter and the, you know, I don't know, wrapping up their summer maintenance, those kinds of things. I think it's just
right.
Appreciated.
Okay.
If we feel like it makes sense. I just think it never hurts to acknowledge the work that they do. Because it gets ignored a lot, and I think they get a lot more complaints in their regard than compliments, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. It's a little bit thankless.
It's a little bit thankless. It's never good enough, and it's but it's such a huge part of what we do from a budgetary standpoint at the very least. It's true.
It is. You know, one of the things.
He's smirking. I'm sure he can imagine.
One of the things. one of the things might help would be just if you're talking about land use, is just throw in a couple of stats about the size of Rapp County, you know, 100 miles north of south, 50 miles east to west. Those are not exact numbers, by the way, but whatever those are.
Right.
I think people forget that we go all the way to the Wyoming border.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
I have people that, like, is Craig in route? I mean, literally, people who live here.
Used to.
Yeah,
right. We need to ask them back.
No. No, thanks. Not if we ever want to get elected again. Or really skew the population.
One other thing to maybe add, I think Mo wanted to get some feedback on his hazard mitigation plan draft and was trying in the smaller group to figure out when and how to plan that, and it sounded like the timing was going to be November, and so that would fit into sound land use and infrastructure actually in some ways in terms of like how we use and plan for disaster in our infrastructure of, you know, what are the likely hazards, those kinds of things. And so there may be a tie in there.
Okay.
Actually, all the way through this is not actually true.
Yeah.
Well, last this month is all about water from an environmental standpoint.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Probably okay.
River?
Question mark? do we want to mention the support for the bus, the regional bus?
Oh.
Is that in the schedule?
Yeah.
It can be.
What kind of support do we contribute financially?
Yes, and it's the bus that goes to Hayden and Craig daily, twice daily.
Do we talk about the bus day? Snow staying or
bus staying and the snow staying? I don't know if we have much to do with that.
Bus staying?
Yeah. I mean, do we take full credit?
We will be asked to contribute financially. You can rest assured that's coming.
Can't wait. No, we don't contribute yet to the bus staying.
No.
Just
exist.
But, you know, I mean, maybe it's not us taking credit for it, but it could be like that. Did you know that bus staying is coming to Broad County with
mobility.
Like a link to the map? Well, it's coming through Broad County.
Yeah. It's going from Schema through a part of Broad County that has no human beings.
Not if it has anything to do with it. But I think, you know, the bus thing is coming. Out. Here's the route. Here's when it's scheduled.
2021.
Okay. Snow staying the same thing.
It might be a little optimistic to put that out then. I don't know.
I'm talking about bus staying this context. Yeah.
Is snow staying starting this year though, or not until next year?
That's snow staying.
That's the one that just goes on the weekend. It's, and the resort is chipping in money on it.
Oh, that's a steal though. Oh, that's right. They're in Rock County.
They are, and you know they really. Our economy.
Speaking of the economy and infrastructure, we might want to talk about broadband. Might not, too.
Ooh.
As far as land use?
What's the status update with that project? What would be a good, if we talk about broadband, what would be a good nugget of information?
Talk to YVEA and.
Yeah, I hate to get ahead of what's happening right now, but certainly the publicly known stuff is that our electric cooperative has a subsidiary now that is promoting or providing broadband services, a company called Luminate.
And just received a dollar grant specific to our fund. That's the way I read it.
They received the
That grants it a little creep pass.
But there's an appeal period, right?
Yes, there's
potentially
an appeal period.
CenturyLink would argue.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to get into it until that is over. I found the information about snow staying. It says beginning this winter, and apparently it's running, it's $40 round trip to Steamboat from Denver, and there are 40 days of service, weekends, December 14th through April 19th, plus MLK Day and President's Day.
$40 round trip to Denver.
That's what it says.
Well, I should just go to the airport services.
Yeah, I'm G. Yep. Okay. That's a lot,
Kate. That's a lot. We have a lot of
that
land and infrastructure, so.
You need to get a cow count.
Yeah.
We have a cow count? What is it?
We posted it.
I don't remember, honestly.
We posted it.
Did we?
I'm going to say it was like 30,000 or something like that.
So,
2-1.
We've got more cows than people.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely have more cows
than people. Well, that's a nice thing to
put in. I think we posted
part
it. I think we posted it. We had some of our residents comment and talk about how we shouldn't be eating meat.
Oh.
Oh. There goes cow right off the list. Put it on, take it off.
Well, we already did it, right?
Yeah,
like
we did.
A couple months ago?
Yeah.
And the cows aren't really here as much in the winter time.
So that means you don't want to talk about our climate action.
Seasonal cow count?
On the sound land use and infrastructure?
Yeah. Don't have enough to talk about yet.
Yeah. I think this is a more...
more than what you're going to be able to get in, anyway.
Right. I think this is more than enough.
Yeah. This is great. Okay. So we will do some refinement, of course, so that my notes actually are not just total chaos. And then we'll get this back to Dan to share with all of you as well. And, you know, if you have any last minute additions, let us know. Commissioner Melton, if you need any assistance or you want us to do anything to help out with your article, let us know too.
I think I'll be all right. Mostly need to make sure we're actually ready to go with the master plan before we start getting out there, because ideally,
about the master plan,
we include a link to the survey, right? I mean, that was sort of the intent of the beginning of November. Be ready to go.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think the survey will be ready to go. It's just, are we fully ready to launch on this? Where are you on that?
I gave him comments on the draft plan and was waiting to hear back. Apparently, I was holding him up with some rather innocuous questions, so I answered those this morning and waiting for a response.
Great.
We shall see. But I told him we're not moving forward unless we have or until we have an agreed upon plan. So, I mean, he's got a couple weeks theoretically to get that done in terms of plugging all this stuff in, even though it's all built around that plan being ready.
Right.
And I don't know, I mean, I know there was refinement to the survey. I don't know if we need to see it again to be clear that it's ready to go or.
I don't have any strong feelings about that. I mean, I think I would hate to. I mean, I honestly, I think Doug probably wants to see it again. I mean, I'd be happy to see it again. I just would hate for it to go out and for someone to say, "Oh my God, there was stuff in there that I didn't know about or that I didn't like or whatever else." And you might as well just cover our bases that way.
I just don't remember whether we incorporated his comments.
Well, I think that most of the comments he was making we had already addressed before he told us. So I think we just want, it's like a, hey, if this addresses your concerns, we just don't have them.
Okay.
Kind of a, I just would hate to go down a road where we have a survey that somebody thinks is not valid in some way. Not
well, I would say it's valid. It's not going to be scientifically
no,
valid.
No.
But, Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Well, ideally, we'd be ready to go if this article comes out.
Mm-hmm. We are chatting with Chad, I think I said Friday, to just confirm that we're on the right track and we kind of get the head nod so that we can start to build out more specifics of some of the master plan engagement posts and those type of things that we suggested as part of that plan. So, you know, once we get the official thumbs up, we can make sure to include all of those things. And if we need to just stick with some of the core messaging around what is a master plan and why it's important and what is land use and how does it all impact everybody, we can do that too. So we can sort of adjust as needed.
You said that's Friday?
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds good.
10:30 if you want to join.
Nope.
Fair enough. Okay, well, that's all I have then.
Great. There wasn't anything on that other document that you wanted us to look at?
No, I just wanted to, just for reference, to recall that while a sort of November is the same as you were saying, but November is our real kickoff to hopefully implementing this engagement and communications plan, or at least this phase one, where we're trying to educate folks around what is planning, what is a master plan, what's our purview, the stakeholder engagement tactics. We really need to lean heavily upon route staff, but some of the other resident engagement tactics were a lot of online and fun activities that we can queue up and have ready to go at a moment's notice. So I know, Dan, you and I have talked about perhaps at the next subcommittee meeting for the master plan, really going through the details of these action items to say, this is exactly what this route rock campaign would look like, and this is really how we plan to run the photo contest, and here's the images we want to use for this BuzzFeed set quiz, and here's more ideas around this one more fun thing. So really trying to give the committee a sense of this is what you can expect to see and get their buy-off on that, and then we can just be ready at a moment's notice to implement that once everyone feels comfortable doing so.
Be interesting to see how that goes. I think me and Dan are probably the only ones in that room who are going to understand. Well, maybe Christy, who are going to understand what the heck you're talking about. So we'll see.
I know. Which is why I thought like maybe I could get more detail or like images around it so it feels more clear.
Right.
But
that's kind of
it. I'm trying to get that to you guys ahead of time, but you can also say like nobody's gonna get that.
I mean, that's kind of the direction I gave Chad was just to try to get clearer, you know, more specific in the plan that he developed to be able to have everyone on the same page along with time frame, deadlines, etc. So we'll see how that looks.
Okay.
The other thing I was wondering, I don't know if you have thoughts about, is in terms of some of the coordination side of this, like the logistical side, if there's a place for Kendra to be supporting or not.
In terms of like kind of executing on some of it? Or?
Well, I just see there's some kind of logistical types of things, like, or, you know, calling the list of groups and, you know, scheduling and stuff.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I just wanted to.
I mean, right now, I've sort of, as instructed, put that in planning's hands.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think that between the two of them, since, you know, they're co-project managers, it seems like they'll figure it out is my,
assumption.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at is, like, there's bandwidth admin in their office. There's other opportunities, too. So, I mean, I'm fine if she's, you know, I think she's more than capable of doing that. Just
also
a question.
On the time of other staff, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, the other, well, we don't have to talk about that.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. I think Kim's well aware of our situation.
Well, I guess I did. What I'm thinking about, though, is just that feeling that the Planning Commission needs to own this. And I understand they don't need to own the process by any means. You know, there's a point at which obviously they need to give their input and on the plan itself, and they have to have some ownership of the plan, but moving away from this assumption that they have to run the whole process.
Yeah. One, I mean, so the feedback, some of the editing that I gave Chad on his draft plan was exactly that, like strip out the planning commission ownership and planning commission arguable role in some of it and making it more generic. So it is more about the community plan, the community, and they may be the vehicle for a lot of those meetings and information, but it's more, you know, the purpose should be broader than just, oh, this is a planning commission thing, because, yeah, it'll devolve into, you know, the list. And, you know, he asked me, that was one of the questions that I apparently held him up on, was, we've got this planning commission list, and, you know, like, you really should worry less about the specific detail of the list and worry much more about the process and make sure that you're getting those ideas out there and gathering information from the public. And that list may change based on that. You know, so don't put out a list and assume that that's the only thing. So,
well, and that's one form of input, right? That's the planning commission's impression of what needs to be addressed.
Right.
And they have a different perspective than the general community, but it's not the only perspective that matters.
One, I mean, he did say in the in one of the master plan subgroup meetings, the idea of informing the planning commission on a more regular basis and providing them with informational opportunities, knowledge opportunities. And I think that's something that arguably should be in the plan overall, is, you know, when and how we're going to do those things, because obviously that has bearing on the outcome of the plan if they are opining on those things with their expertise and that hat. But, you know, obviously also trying to broadcast some of that too, to include community members, and maybe that's a beneficial thing in recruitment of planning commissioners and things, you know, and just opening up that avenue a little bit. But I think, you know, we've got to conceive of what the run of show is and when we're going to do those and schedule those, and that's a work effort. So.
Let's just keep doing what we've always been doing.
Low expectations.
Just lower the expectations of people. Yeah. It sounds good.
We should keep doing what we've been doing and expect different results.
That sounds even better. Yeah. It's not as good at all.
Even less delusional.
Okay. Just requires some magic.
Yeah.
All
right.
I think we're at it.
All right.
I'll have a stunning article about master plan. Great.
And I will find you as you may and share a cocktail.
You better.
Oh,
that sounds good. I appreciate your time, everyone. And if that will get this turned around and back to you for a final look before we move forward.
Thanks, Kim.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a good one.
Bye.
Yeah, I'm really regretting missing that, but, you know, shit happens.
The letter's still alive.
I'm